Marcia said she could see what I was driving at, but pointed out that Leslie was very responsible and didn't need the constant reminders. Then she became quiet and hung her head. In a soft voice, she said, "But it would be so hard to lose another child." On the verge of tears, Marcia explained that she had another daughter, Elisa, who was born with hydrocephalus, a swelling of the brain that results from a blockage of the cerebral ventricles. Shortly after Elisa was born, a neurosurgeon had to place a shunt in her brain to bypass the blockage and prevent fatal brain swelling. Despite this problem, Elisa developed normally and was bright and well-adjusted. She studied hard in high school and enrolled at Cornell University as a pre-medical student. On Parents' Day, Marcia drove to Ithaca from her home in Manhattan to visit Elisa. Elisa was thrilled to see her mother, but complained of headaches and nausea. Marcia asked if she'd cleaned the shunt recently, since any blockage could cause these symptoms. Elisa reassured Marcia that the shunt was fine. Marcia was exhausted from the long drive, but asked Elisa if she wanted to go out to dinner. When Elisa said she had to study for an important test the next day, Marcia was relieved because she was looking forward to unwinding at the hotel. Marcia became quiet again. I could see tears welling up in her eyes, but she was holding back. Then she blurted out, "Elisa died that night," and began to sob uncontrollably. After she wept for a little while, I asked Marcia if she'd had any trouble grieving Elisa's death. She nodded. I asked if she felt guilty about Elisa's death. She nodded again and said that she felt she'd been selfish and that if she'd simply stayed with Elisa a little longer, she could have saved her life. She said she felt like she'd let her daughter down and wanted to make sure she didn't make the same mistake again. I asked Marcia to add these additional negative thoughts to her daily mood log. She believed them all 100%. I asked Marcia what thought she wanted to work on first. She selected the fifth thought. I was responsible for Elisa's death. I was selfish and let her down. Because Marcia's fifth negative thought clearly involved self-blame, I decided to try the double standard technique first. This technique capitalizes on the fact that many of us operate on a double standard. When we're upset, we rip ourselves to shreds. But if we were talking to a dear friend with the exact same problem, we'd be far more objective and compassionate. I asked Marcia what she'd say to a friend whose daughter had died under similar circumstances. Would she say, "You were responsible for your daughter's death, you were selfish, and you let her down"? Marcia seemed shocked and said she'd never talked to a dear friend like that. I asked what she'd say instead. Marcia replied, "I'd tell her that she's not God and that she can't be there to help her children at every moment. I'd remind her that if she'd known her daughter needed help that night, she would have been there for her, just as she'd been so many times in the past. I'd also remind her that she'd always been a very kind and giving individual and a very devoted mother, and that it wasn't very realistic to label herself as selfish." I asked Marcia if she was just being nice to her friend or speaking the truth. She said her statement was absolutely true. I asked her to write it down in the positive thoughts column of her daily mood log, directly across from the fifth negative thought. "If I'd known Elisa needed my help that night, I would have been there for her, just as any loving mother would have been." I asked Marcia to rate how much she believed this thought. She put 100% in the percent belief column because the positive thought seemed absolutely true to her. I pointed out that the positive thought seemed to contradict a negative thought. On the one hand, she's telling herself that she was selfish and that she was responsible for Elisa's death. But on the other hand, she knows that she would have done anything to save her daughter's life. You can't believe opposite things at the same time, so she'd have to give up her belief in either the negative thought or the positive thought. Marcia said the negative thought no longer seemed realistic. I asked her to indicate how strongly she now believed it, from 0% to 100%. She crossed out the 100% in the percent before column and put 5% in the percent after column, indicating that she no longer believed the fifth negative thought. If a positive thought is going to change the way you feel at the gut level, it has to fulfill two conditions. The necessary condition. The positive thought must be 100% true, or nearly 100% true, or it won't help. The sufficient condition. The positive thought has to put the lie to the negative thought. Remember, when you change the way you think, you can change the way you feel. Marcia's positive thought was absolutely valid. It also put the lie to her negative thought, and she no longer believed that her selfishness had caused Elisa's death. This means that the positive thought fulfilled the necessary and sufficient conditions for emotional change. In fact, Marcia experienced a sudden wave of relief and no longer felt guilty and ashamed about her daughter's death. I asked if she thought the guilt she felt about Elisa's death and her constant worrying about Leslie were related. Although this motive might seem obvious to you, it came as a complete surprise to Marcia. Even though she was a psychologist, she'd never thought about this possibility. We sometimes have great insight into other people's problems, but a blind spot when it comes to our own. This insight cast her worrying in a different light. Instead of viewing it as a compulsive neurosis that she should get over, she saw it as an expression of love for both of her daughters. I also asked whether all the guilt and shame might have been the stumbling block that had prevented her from grieving Elisa's death and letting go. Marcia nodded and began to weep again. After she cried, Marcia felt a dramatic uplift in her mood. At this point, I asked if she could challenge the other thoughts on her daily mood log. She came up with convincing positive thoughts that seemed to contradict the negative thoughts that had been plaguing her. To find out if she was feeling better, I asked Marcia to reevaluate her negative emotions on a scale from 0, not at all, to 100%, extreme. In the percent after column in the emotions section, all her negative feelings improved dramatically. She still felt some sadness and a touch of anxiety and guilt, but this was perfectly normal. After all, she'd been thinking about the death of her daughter. I asked Marcia if she'd ever discussed her feelings about Elisa's death with Leslie. This had never occurred to her, and she decided to have the discussion that very evening, immediately after the workshop. It only took 45 minutes for Marcia to put an end to years of worrying and guilt. I don't mean to imply that everyone will experience relief in 45 minutes, but I'm convinced that every person who suffers from anxiety or depression can be helped just as much as Marcia was. There were several keys to her recovery. First, Marcia focused on one specific moment when she was feeling anxious. Second, she pinpointed exactly how she was feeling and recorded the negative thoughts that were causing all the worrying, guilt, and shame on the daily mood log. Third, we uncovered the hidden emotions that were fueling Marcia's fears about Leslie. Fourth, Marcia was willing to take a chance and confront the devil she'd been avoiding. Finally, when she put the lie to her negative thoughts, she forgave herself and allowed herself to grieve. At that moment, she experienced profound relief and recovered. When you experience enlightenment at one moment of your life, there will nearly always be a dramatic shift in all your perceptions about yourself and the world.